I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to Seriously, the podcast from the New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week, we're talking about the film Girls Trip
and the BBC crime drama Top of the Lake, China Girl. We've also got some great podcast recommendations for you, so we'll be talking about that later in the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously, a kind of weird episode of Seriously, because if you came to our very first live podcast at Shout Out Live Festival in London this weekend, you might have already heard a little bit of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, you got a sneak peek of the definitely very well rehearsed thing that we're about to do again now.
Yeah, so, doing live podcasts is strange, isn't it? We've never done anything like that before and it's kind of weird. So
it's kind of weird, but I think it went well. I mean, I'm still slightly confused as to why people enjoy watching us do what we're doing right now, but they do, and I'm not going to argue with that.
But yeah, thanks to everyone who came and saw us at Shout Out Live. You were a lovely audience, I have to say. Everyone was very, very generous. So thank you so much for coming.
It was a really good event all round. Yeah, I'm really glad that it happened and I hope that they repeat it next year.
Mm-hmm, totally.
But if you couldn't come and you still want a chance to watch us talking into microphones, why wouldn't you? You've got some more opportunities coming up. We're doing another Game of Thrones quiz on the 12th of September.
Can we just pause? I've literally transformed into full-on Game of Thrones nerd.
I know. I've been seeing this happen on your Twitter. It's amazing.
I like feel like weird about it in my soul because I spent so long just being like, who are these absolute weirdos? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I hate them. And now I've like, you know, sometimes you just like thinking about a thing and it's your safe place. I was like walking to work this morning being like, I hope Danny and John have sex. I don't care if they're aunt and nephew. I want them to bang. Like things like this just like going around in my mind all the time. So yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry to my fans. You won't be happy about this.
Yeah, also, I loved your tweet where you were like, I think I fancy Kit Harington now, which means maybe I fancy poshness.
Also, something even worse happened this morning where I watched a video where Kit Harington was campaigning for a cause that's actually really close to my heart about like raising the minimum wage for care workers, which is something I care about loads because I live with carers. And yeah, I was just like, oh no. Oh, it's too late for me.
It's too late now.
Damn it.
You belong to him now.
But yeah, so if anyone wants to talk about Game of Thrones with me, just give me a call, man. I'm like here for it.
Yeah, or come to the Game of Thrones quiz on the 12th of September.
That's probably a more professional way of doing this.
Between rounds, Anna will be available for all of your thoughts and feelings.
Totally. Anyway, sorry. So yeah, we've got the quiz on the 12th.
And then another live episode on the 17th. At the London Podcast Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets for that go to seriouslypod.com/London Podfest and that'll take you straight to the page to buy
them. A personalised URL for that event.
I know, I may have recently worked out how to do that.
Wow, Caroline.
I know, get me, I'm basically a developer now. And tickets for the Game of Thrones quiz, seriouslypod.com/events or our Twitter or Facebook has it as well. Yeah, there are, I think, about 30 of those left, so
they're selling like hotcakes.
They're selling pretty quickly, so hurry up and get yours.
So rolling on with the show, the first thing we're going to talk about is Girls Trip, the 2017 American comedy film directed by Malcolm D. Lee. It stars Regina Hall, Queen Latifah, Tiffany Haddish and Jada Pinkett Smith as four friends who go to New Orleans to attend the Essence Music Festival.
Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for this day of life. My heart is so full of joy for these women right here. Lord, please make sure that Lisa don't get an STD and that nobody has kidney failure, because we finna get messed up. And let me get pregnant by somebody rich. That's all I ask. Amen.
We haven't hung in 5 years. I miss you guys. We need a girls' trip.
That's my car.
Not anymore, baby.
What if I just whip out my titties, you know? Okay, a titty.
I'll take a titty for a bike ride.
You sure you want to get turned this weekend with your girls?
I say this out of love.
Preach, girl.
If you are going to come along with us, please refrain from saying things like preach or go girl or any other colloquialisms that you may have looked up on Urban Dictionary.
Girl, bye.
That's my girl.
This weekend is about us. We deserve this. So let's go.
Basically a film about four friends who haven't seen each other for a really long time. I think it's 5 years in the premise. They used to see each other at least, you know, once a year for some sort of big girls' trip. They're friends from college, and they haven't done it in a while due to various career pressures and motherhood pressures and divorces, etc., etc. And then they finally decide, no, we've got an opportunity to see each other at this big, what do you call it, what festival? It's not a music festival, it's because it's the magazines festival.
Yeah, it's like a big magazine kind of cultural thing, isn't it? You know, so there is musical performances, but there are also speeches and loads of expos, and just generally it's a great big bonanza, right?
Yeah, and it's a big celebration of Black womanhood.
Exactly.
Something that these four friends kind of care about, and that seems like a good reason for them to go together. It's an interesting film because it is just like, on one hand, a really ridiculous, like, hangover style, balls out, hilarious, girls pissing themselves everywhere, like, silly comedy. And on the other hand, it's like very, very sentimental.
Yeah, it is. And it's an interesting blend of the two, actually, that you can go from, yeah, that there's an amazing set piece scene where they're doing this kind of zip wire type thing,
mm-hmm.
and then someone gets stuck and like pisses herself all over the people in the street below, and it's really funny, to a voiceover being like, I just always knew that they would be my girls and that I would have their backs. And it's, I don't know, somehow you don't get whiplash from that in the way that I would think you would.
The other thing is that just a trope of men's comedies as well? Like things, you know, like white men comedies like The Hangover, but you just don't notice it as much because it's kind of considered inherently funny when men are sentimental.
Maybe. I feel
like in The Hangover there is a lot of like, I'm so glad I'm here with my boys, but you're like invited to laugh at it rather than be like, yeah, good for you guys. Is that a thing?
Yeah, I think you're probably right. There are some really interesting thoughts on masculinity in this film as well,
mm-hmm.
I think. I was very struck by the fact that you see quite a lot of male nudity.
Yeah.
Including like full frontal.
Yeah, like a full dick in a grapefruit situation.
Whereas you see no female nudity, really.
Yeah. Also, right? I feel like for people who haven't seen the film, that wasn't a weird euphemism.
Yeah. No.
I don't use grapefruit as like some weird slag.
Grapefruit becomes relevant. You need to go and see the film to understand why. So there are lots of things about this film that are kind of flipping genre or like being slightly meta, right?
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I loved about, yeah, there's quite a lot of meta stuff in there, as you rightly say. There's a line about representation in this film, like motifs about how these women are enjoying this festival because it's a chance for them to sort of see themselves, or conversations about how Ryan feels that she has to be a bit of a role model, like these sorts of things. But I also really love the kind of journalism plotline in this. As a journalist, obviously, that kind of stuck out to me. So basically, the lead character, Ryan, she is a celebrity who sells her brand on the idea of having it all. That's like a great career, amazing cooking domestic life, I think is meant to be one of them, and a lovely husband who's like very much part of her brand. So she's desperately trying to sell that part of herself and like get a TV show with her husband and stuff. And one of the other girls, Sasha, is a celebrity journalist who kind of wishes she was more than a celebrity journalist. That's kind of a distinction the film makes, not one that I'm particularly making, but she wants to run, I think there's a line about the first Black Huffington Post in there. So I really liked these sorts of explorations about like how hard it is to get a job in media.
Yes.
I really loved all of that.
Yeah, and it's also all bound up with the friendship between Sasha and Ryan, because, you know, they were back when they weren't famous and they, you know, when they were much younger, they were going to, you know, launch a new kind of media thing together. And then Ryan like skipped out on it to do her own thing with her husband. And the career stuff and the personal stuff are all intertwined.
Totally. Yeah. And the challenge is for them to kind of find a balance with each other between all these things, like Jada Pinkett Smith's character, who's like is trying to strike a balance between being a really overprotective, caring mother and finding time to have fun with her friends and care about her friends. And they've all got that kind of conflict going on, apart from like I guess Tiffany Haddish's character, who doesn't so much. She's more just like here to party.
Yeah, we know a lot less about her backstory, really. We see one scene where she's at her generic office job. We don't know what it is that she does, and her boss is trying to fire her for an overreaction to someone eating her sandwich. It's almost like a Ross from Friends situation. She's like hulked out.
I could totally forgot about that scene.
Yeah, she's like hulked out on some guy who ate her lunch. And her boss is trying to be like, we're gonna have to let you go, and she's like, go back to work.
Yeah,
and
she's basically like, oh, just good, because I actually wanted Monday off.
she actually just refuses to be fired. Yeah, which is really funny.
She is obviously amazing in this.
Yeah, I'd say
I know she you really thought she was a standout.
I really thought she was brilliant. So funny, both in her physical comedy and her timing and the way she delivers lines. And she managed to like wring comedy out of stuff that probably wasn't even on the page that funny, which I always think is the mark of a great comedian.
Totally.
And in terms of performances, it reminded me of Kate McKinnon in Ghostbusters, who also had that quality of being able to make you laugh at stuff that wasn't necessarily
intended
to be comic. And ditto Melissa McCartney in Bridesmaids.
Yeah, all three of these performances have like an unpredictability, I think, that's quite thrilling about them. Like, although you've got a script and you know that everything that happens next is like very ordered and, you know, it's probably been written by like seven at least different writers, when you're watching them, you get a sort of sense of like, oh, anything could happen with this character.
Yeah,
which
I don't
is
know
really
what,
exciting.
What's she going to do next?
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, in a film that in some ways has quite a predictable plot arc.
Yeah.
it's a really useful sort of lightening influence.
Can I admit something talking of predictable plot arc? So I had to rush to make this movie before we did our live episode. So I went on Friday night, but I was like, I'm going to go to the 20 to 6. So I like had to rush out of work a bit early, but I was late because I had to finish some work. And so I got at the cinema at 6 and I was like, want a girls trip? And it was like flashing like limited availability. And they were like, yep, great, go in. So I like ran in and it had just started. And I was like, oh, normally there's half an hour of adverts. And I was only 20 minutes late. So I was a bit like, nah. I was watching it and I was like, these girls are like mid-argument. This must have really started in media res. Where are they? Someone's done a speech. This is cool. And then I was like went on and I was like, wow, this is like the trip seems to be over, but we're at the beginning of the movie. This is like a really wow, I'm like thrilled by this non-traditional narrative. And then like the credits rolled and I was like, oh fuck.
You were actually early.
I was in like a different screening and I was early for a 6:40. There was obviously so many screenings
that so you were in a different
I was due for the next one.
You saw the ending before the beginning.
I honestly think that because it was quite a small screening, no one in there was like, why is this girl coming 10 minutes from the end with like a bag of popcorn and like a drink? Like just sat there like, great film. So weird. So I actually knew what was going to happen from the beginning, but it didn't dampen my enjoyment of the movie.
Well, I feel like you kind of knew anyway, right? I didn't have that experience and I was still like, I think I know how this is going to turn out.
I think there's going to be a rocky road, but
I think friendship is going to prevail.
Yeah.
But yeah, so many things about this film are really joyful. The gross out element of it, the sort of physical comedy, the quick-wittedness, but also just lots of the little asides and all that kind of thing are really funny. I really enjoyed the way the male characters in this were just totally in the background. They were the supporting cast. Even Ryan's husband, who does have a kind of plot lever element to his character, and that the musician Julian, who's the guy that maybe she really likes, and the guy that Jada Pinkett Smith's character hooks up with, like they're all there, but they're all very much like second tier in terms of importance.
Totally.
And I just really like that. So yeah, it's so good to see Hollywood actually making a film that just unequivocally makes black women the lead.
And older black women as well. Like this just ticks so many boxes of like people who aren't normally represented in these big like comedy movies in this way. And yeah, it's just so good.
Yeah.
As all would have predicted, except Hollywood.
Except Hollywood. But then I feel like, you know, Hidden Figures I think, surprised studios yeah. with it, the massive amount of money it took at the box office.
Yeah, and we've seen, as you've said before about Bridesmaids and these other films kind of contributing to this trend.
But yeah.
we have seen older women as well, like Bad Moms.
I'd say in the last maybe 5-7 years, there's been a bit of a trend of Hollywood, they take a perceived risk on a film that, like, so like Wonder Woman's a good example of this in a different genre. It's like, you know, you can't lead a film with a female superhero because, you know, no one will see a Black Widow movie, blah, blah, blah. Cut to Wonder Woman's film grosses many millions of dollars and lots
and Black
of
Panther on the way and all this kind of
and
stuff.
Lots of little girls buy a lot of merch, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
So there needs to be the one breakout film to buck the trend, and then they're like, oh, okay, we can just lead films with Black women and people will go to see them in their thousands.
Totally. And it grossed at least $73 million, I think, in the US, so yeah, it's like doing it, incredibly well.
It had as well something that I think indicates really good word of mouth, in that it barely dropped at all from its first weekend to its second weekend something, which I think is something that Get Out had as well, because that was a film that didn't have such a big marketing push behind it, but everyone was telling all their friends to go. So it had a really successful second
And they're calling
weekend.
Get Out the most profitable movie of 2017 because it was such, it was very low budget and brought in a lot of money for its budget. So it's, although it's, you know, not the highest grossing or anything like that, it's probably the most profitable movie of 2017, which is amazing.
So I really hope that all of this adds up to a kind of tipping point where we'll never be in an Oscars so white situation ever again.
We can but hope.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Now we're going to talk about the BBC crime drama series Top of the Lake. The second series of this has just premiered on BBC iPlayer and BBC Two, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's created and written by Jane Campion, the acclaimed director of The Piano and lots of other films like that. And it stars Elizabeth Moss as Detective Robin Griffin. The first series, which came out in 2013, received massive plaudits, real critics' choice of a piece of TV. It was set in New Zealand, and I think the wildness and remoteness of its setting definitely appealed to that. And now this second series, Top of the Lake China Girl, is set back in Sydney, where Robin lives and works, and begins with a mysterious suitcase appearing from the sea.
Detective Griffin, you good? You all right?
Pleased to be back.
I'd like to say thank you. Your baby has been loved by me very much.
So you're a policewoman?
I'm a detective.
That's hilarious. I like you.
We have a report from Bondi Beach. There's a suitcase washed up. There's black human hair coming from the inside.
You're with me.
to tell me what you saw.
What is it about your cinnamon, mate? Come on, tell us.
Cinnamon worked at Silk 41, a brothel.
My dad and my mum want to meet you.
The destiny of man
is to love a woman?
No. The destiny of man is to enslave women.
So I have not seen Top of the Lake season one, and I watched one episode of Top of the Lake China Girl, and I was quite confused.
Yeah, so this is an interesting point about this, because I think everyone thought it was going to be a lot more standalone than it's actually turned out to be. Because the first series, I've watched two of the six or seven episodes, I think, and I don't really know what happens.
Mm.
And I thought that I could start season two and it would, you know, just be the same detective, but in a different place, different case, this kind of stuff. But actually, I think they've made the decision to bring far more of the detective's personal narrative into it.
Yeah.
And therefore, it does inform, you know, what's happening in season two.
Yeah, so, which is absolutely not a criticism. Like,
not at all. You know, and I think possibly the reason they did that was because of Elizabeth Moss's performance and the way that audiences responded to the character as well as just the, you know, plot and the narrative.
And we just have an absolutely insatiable desire for, like, troubled detectives.
I know.
Why is it just, like, the ultimate character? Like, I mean, I've, as discussed before on Seriously, like, I've been watching Happy Valley. The thing that I love about Happy Valley is the lead, obviously, in her story.
And all of those Scandi noir stuff, like
and like Broadchurch. I've been watching Broadchurch lately. David Tennant in Broadchurch, where he's like, "That detective was my wife." Like all these kinds of things, like
So I think it goes back. Well, essentially, I think you could argue that Sherlock Holmes is a troubled detective, even in the Conan Doyle version.
Yeah, I guess detective stories like have unreliable narrators as like a key part of the genre, right? That's like going way back. So.
I was very struck, actually, particularly by the comparison between Robin Griffin and Sarah Lunt, the central character of The Killing, especially in the first series, because I remember watching The Killing with my dad over Christmas, and every episode being like, "No, Sarah, don't go into the dark abandoned building alone. Without a torch. Wait for backup. It's only going to be 10 minutes.
That is another classic trope of like all detective stories. You're like, why aren't they doing this like through procedure?
Yeah.
Like, why isn't there a police car here with this person?
And that's exactly what Robin Griffin does all the time. And I should say, like, spoilers full for series one and two of this, because I'm not sure we can keep them separate.
Mm-hmm.
There's a set piece scene, I think in maybe the second or third episode of series one, where like it's a really remote part of New Zealand, this town on a lake anyway, so it's not like she can like radio for a really quick response. It'll probably take 20 minutes for them to get to her. She goes off to investigate this suspect who lives in a cabin in the woods on his own and is known to have a big collection of guns.
Just don't do that.
And of course what happens is that she ends up like having to barricade herself in the cabin while he tries to shoot at her through the windows. It's like, Robin,
why? What about this was a good idea from the beginning?
Yeah. But anyway, so series two, set in Sydney around Bondi Beach, actually. So it's a fairly well-known landmark. Completely different kind of landscape and setting to
no
the
more
first
lake.
Series. No more beautiful lake, mountains and trees, etc. But still Robin Griffin with her kind of baggage and her particular... She's got quite an intuitive approach to crime, I feel like. She goes with her hunches a lot.
But she seems to be like a high-functioning alcoholic, and she's obviously suffering past trauma that is unresolved, and a bit of a loner, doesn't seem to want to like get to know anyone, even when people are very much, you know, all the things we know and love.
She has a real problem in that, she's a lot of bad things have happened to her in her life, mostly violence towards her perpetrated by men. And therefore... like aggression from men or even like low-level sexism is quite a trigger for her.
Totally.
And she works in a police force that's dominated by men.
Yeah.
So we see this even in the first episode of China Girl, where she's, you know, giving a seminar to some recruits and one of them like sasses her and laughs and she just completely flips out on him. And that's a recurring motif throughout the whole thing, that she's quick to suspect men of having bad motives. And she will then like pursue them with single-minded purpose. And of course, because of the way the world works, she's always right.
Yeah. And I think one thing that Jane Campion's so good at writing in this is, so for example, when that exchange happens and she like overreacts potentially, though, who cares really, to this guy who's being low-level sexist towards her at work, then her boss, I think he's her boss. He like takes her out for dinner to like talk about it. But he kind of says some low-level sexist things as well in that exchange. He's a bit like, hey, so heard you were getting married. Going to tell me what happened? And it's a bit inappropriate. And you're a bit like, leave her alone. And it's not, it's nothing malicious and it's nothing like ill-meant. It's just part of this tapestry. And I don't know, you get a sense of how unavoidable all these things are.
Mm. So as well as that sort of dynamic about sexism and violence towards women, there's also a strong thread about motherhood in this series, because part of what Robin's doing, as well as investigating this case of the quote China girl who's washed up on Bondi Beach in a suitcase, she's also getting back in touch with a daughter that was adopted when she was a baby. So she's, you know, replying to a letter that the daughter wrote to her a few years ago, and she now feels like she's in a position to actually make contact and stuff. And then also, and again, spoilers, there turns out to be quite a strong surrogacy angle to the mystery that she's investigating.
Right.
So there's lots of stuff about, you know, Nicole Kidman plays her daughter's adopted mother. And so there's a lot that I think, I believe even the final episode of the series is called The Battle of the Mothers or something. So it's...
Oh, see, because I've seen these families, but those threads have not come together yet for me. And now I'm even thinking, like, looking at that daughter, you're like, oh yeah, she even looks a bit like Elizabeth Moss.
Random trivia side note, that the actress who plays the daughter is Jane Campion's daughter.
Oh, no way.
Mm.
Wow. That, I thought those were some of the best scenes in it. The scenes with Nicole Kidman and that actress and the father, like this sort of family portrait of a family basically crumbling, a dysfunctional family crumbling. And it's interesting to me that they've gone much further down that road as the series has progressed, because I do think that, yeah, the performances were really good and the tension was really weird and good. And yeah.
Yeah, Nicole Kidman has some really good scenes in this.
She's just great, isn't she?
I've seen some trend pieces already this year about like Nicole Kidman is having her best year.
Yeah, she's really, I don't know, I feel very, very interested in her performances at the moment.
Yeah, because I think people cite, you know, she was, I've not seen it, but apparently she was great in Big Little Lies. Then the Sofia Coppola film, The Beguiled, and now this, like she's really on a role playing like older women with difficult pasts kind of thing. And that's exactly what she's doing in this. And she's got some great stuff in this, like because, you know, she's split up with the adopted daughter's father and she's now living with a woman and seemingly in a happy relationship with her, but obviously because they're having problems with their daughter, she's still having to co-parent a lot. And there's just this amazing scene where they're having an argument in the kitchen, and even though she doesn't live there anymore, she's like drying up dishes and putting them away, and the fact that she knows where everything goes even though this isn't her house anymore is really an interesting choice, you know.
Completely. And I think that's a classic gendered dynamic, isn't it? But she seems to be still doing all the difficult parenting.
Yes,
she's a classic gendered dynamic. She's not the one being like, yeah, it'll be okay, you can marry this stranger. She's the one being like, I feel really stressed about this, you're 17 years old, you need to think about this, this could be a mistake for you. Which DAD doesn't want to do.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting sort of subplot. And then arguably the main focus of the whole thing is this group of sex workers in Sydney, one of whose number is found dead, and eventually they identify her and they find out the place that she's worked. And yeah, so the police have to question them, try and find out, are they being exploited, what's happening to them, all this sort of stuff. And it's so interesting the way that they did that, because I feel like dead sex worker in a suitcase is in some ways a really stereotypical way of...
Yeah, it's an uncomfortable trope on TV, isn't it?
But there are certain ways I feel in which Jane Campion handled that better than the average. First is that it's not titillating at all. Like, there's no like sexy dead shots of a naked dead woman. Like, it's not like that. And then...
They also love the sex worker like killed during some sort of like kinky sex thing, don't they, a lot? And there's none of that vibe here at all.
Not at all, no. Then also, I've read an interview with Jane Campion where she explained that as part of the writing process of this, they met with some women from a sex workers collective in Australia and like took their views and their points about portrayals, and so actually ended up writing a character into the show who is from a sex workers collective who gets to put those points across and make that. And she acts as a kind of, she helps the police approach people sensitively and without endangering them and stuff like that. And I was like, that's not a perspective
that you normally get. It's true. And without sounding completely banal, you can see research in stuff. Like, there's a reason why programs like Scum are so good, because, you know, Julie Andem did 6 months of interviews with teenagers. And you see this, I don't know, you see this in other shows like Three Girls. In Three Girls, I felt uncomfortable at the beginning, and as it went on, I felt so much less uncomfortable, because you do see how much of the real people involved come through in that drama. And then, you know, if you go and Google it after, you do realize, oh yeah, they did loads and loads and loads of research for this show, and it was really responsibly handled. And without getting too prescriptivist about it, like, I don't know, it's just amazing to me that you can always tell. You can always tell.
Definitely. There's an exchange later on in China Girl where one of the characters is like, her awful controlling boyfriend wants to like pimp her out, essentially. And she approaches the woman who's in charge of the brothel and is like, I want to start working here. And the woman's like, this is not an easy job. Like, all these girls are trained, they know a lot about it. Like, she basically lays out all the reasons why you can't just like fuck someone and call yourself a sex worker.
Yeah.
Again, an interesting perspective.
Right. Exactly. It's one that's coming from a real person. And yeah. That's...
But at the same time, it doesn't necessarily kind of glorify what can be a really dangerous line of work. And it also doesn't make, it doesn't say, oh, all these women chose this and it's wonderful. It like lays out the various like racial and misogynistic events that have led to them being there in the way they are. So yeah, I thought in that sense it was a quite a refreshing way of looking at what can be a very tired trope.
Totally. So it's a heavy show.
It is, we're not gonna lie.
But if you feel like it's something you can handle, definitely check it out. So now it's time for the part of the podcast where we recommend each other things, slash you recommend us things, slash it's just a great exchange of things that people love. So this week, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, we were at Shout Out Live Festival 2017, and we just wanted to take the opportunity to shout them out.
Yeah, exactly. So the Shout Out Network, who ran the festival, are a brilliant network of BME podcasts that really do a great job of kind of raising the visibility of podcasts that maybe don't necessarily get a lot of attention in other places. And yeah, since kind of getting involved in working with them, we've been listening to lots of their shows and we wanted to recommend you a few. So I would say my favourite show from the network is called Melanin Millennials.
Yeah, we've both listened to this and it's absolutely great.
It's really good. It's a kind of politics and pop culture show, I guess. Also an interview show. They regularly have really good guests.
Yeah, so it's hosted by Satya and Imri, who are two 20-something black women. And yeah, they're just both really sharp and really funny. And it's, I mean, it's they're the show, right?
Yeah, they are fantastic. I would listen to them talk about anything. And then the other one that I wanted to flag up that you should listen to is called Mostly Lit. And this is, yeah, so it's got three hosts and they say join them in their journey to keep up with the London experience while in exploring the intersection of literature and black culture. So it's very much like a books podcast. It's not afraid of getting quite like critical and highbrow and in-depth about stuff, but in a way that is really approachable. Like, I don't listen to any other podcasts that have as sophisticated an analysis as they do, but it's still really fun.
That's wicked.
So yeah, I would definitely recommend checking them out as well.
Yeah, and just the whole Shout Out Network is really cool. And I think podcasting in general has been a really great thing for raising profiles of people who, you know, for whatever reason, might not get the spotlight into more traditional media, whether it's that, whether that's because of racism or sexism or whatever. But yeah, so many have just completely broken through and shown how engaging and great it is to have like voices from different areas of culture. one of the biggest names at the festival this weekend was, of course, Another Round, who were just like basically the biggest people in podcasting,
yeah,
which is really cool.
Which is really cool. Heaven and Tracy from Another Round came all the way from New York to be at the festival.
Their show looked so... I missed their show and I'm so annoyed about it, especially because someone that I really love, who I follow on Twitter called Bolu, was part of their show.
Yeah, they had a couple of really great guests.
Yeah, really great British guests. So I'm really sad that I missed that. It was my friend's birthday. He doesn't even listen. So
I'm sure they'll be putting that out as a recording though. So when live episodes start emerging from this thing, we will be tweeting them so that you can check it out if you weren't there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely check out Shout Out Network and some of their shows and let us know what you think. Meanwhile, I feel like the last time we did a proper episode, we decided we were going to talk about a book that we'd been recommended by listener Isabel Greenberg. And Friend of the show, Isabel Greenberg, which we did not do, really. Sorry, everyone.
Well,
we didn't
just,
keep
we've
up
just
with
had
our homework.
Lots of different things on, haven't we? So it hasn't been, we just haven't got to it yet.
We haven't got to it yet. I have it right here. I just haven't read it yet.
It's a lovely book. I'm looking at it.
So anyway, we're going to roll that forward to next week. And you can hear us talking about Swimming Studies by Leanne Shapton, which is a kind of part memoir, part graphic novel. She's a artist and graphic novelist. I think she's done some full pictorial work as well, but this is a kind of blend of the two.
Oh, I'm so excited. And I love swimming.
Yeah, me too. I'm really bad at it, but I love doing it. So yeah, I'm really excited to read this. So yeah, if you would like to keep up with our recommends, get hold of a copy.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, where you could also leave us a review if you'd like.
We've got lots of events coming up this summer, including festivals, live episodes, and quizzes. Find out more and buy tickets at seriouslypod.com/events.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.